Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, our speaker will be Teresa Bosa. I think everyone here knows Teresa. Teresa, is there a title for your talk tonight?
Yes, the title is Mother and Earth.
All right, well, good evening. Thank you for being here tonight. And I would like to start by reading a poem, the poem that is on the screen. So the title is Everything is Waiting for You, and many of you might be familiar with it, by David White. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. As if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely, even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. And the tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything, everything is waiting for you. Well, so as you know, this past Saturday we had our holiday party. I think many of you were there. And one of the questions we asked during the program, now that this year is about to end, was, what will you take with you and what will you leave behind? And I was busy running the program with Vanessa that evening, so I really didn't think about an answer for myself. But thinking about it after the party, I thought that one of the things that I will definitely take with me from this year is my mother's smile and the tenderness that I feel when I see her walking and when I look at her feet. So the title of my talk tonight is Mother and Earth, and is dedicated to my mother, Maruja, mi madre Maruja, who has been the best companion during this pandemic. In a talk a few months ago, I think the title was Changing Values, Les said that during our Sasen practice, we do not discover, we remember. So that made me think that, you know, when I talk about water a few months ago and the wind most recently, maybe what I was doing was remembering that I am water and that I am the wind. That, as the Buddha said in the Sati Oh, this is a difficult one. Let me look at it. In the Satipatthana Sutta, about the foundations of mindfulness, we have in our bodies the element of water, the element of earth, the element of fire, and the element of the wind. So connecting with the earth, connecting with fire, with water, and air within us connects us with all of existence. We can say in that sense that we are very elemental. To feel that our composition is the rest, is the same as the rest of the universe, that we are exactly the same as everything around us, is a good feeling to have. And if not a feeling yet, is a good thought to have, at least for me. And I have been really appreciative lately about the ground beneath my feet, to be able to stand on my feet. I am grateful to my feet. So I started being more aware of my feet after a recent visit to a local bank here in the town where I am right now in northern Spain. And as many of you know, I have spent this past year in Spain with my mother, who is almost 90 and suffers from Alzheimer's. So during a recent visit to a local bank where we both have a share account, the director asked me if I would like to buy an insurance to cover the cost of the burial when she passes away. And the price of the policy changed based on whether there was cremation or not. So I did remember that my mother in the past had expressed an interest in being cremated. And I told the director that I had to think about it and went back home. And when I got home, my mother was sitting on a resting chair where she usually takes naps during the day. And she was sleeping. And the first thing that I noticed when I got home were her feet. She has always loved walking, and despite her advanced condition, she still remembers how to walk and goes for walks every day. So I had an instant rejection to the idea of her being cremated, to her feet being extinguished. For some reason that I cannot fully explain, I very much associate my mother with her feet. And looking at her feet and her empty shoes, especially now, I always have a warm feeling. And one of the things that I remember her telling me over and over when I was growing up was, "Ponte las zapatillas," which means put on the slippers. I love walking barefoot in the winter. You know, when I was growing up, my parents had a bakery, and the floor was always warm because the bakery was downstairs. We lived on the first floor. But my mother didn't let me do that. She had her theory that walking barefoot was really bad, especially for girls. So I always had to put on my slippers, and I always got a new pair for Christmas. Now I'm buying also slippers for myself and for her. So as I said, I want to take with me from these years my mother's feet and her smile. She has the sweetest smile. It's a smile that is free from care. And being with someone who is not worried, who wasn't worried this year, has been very helpful for me. They say that I am taking care of her, but she has also been taking care of me. And a while back, I read the book Crooked Cucumber, and a quote from that book stayed with me. The quote says, I don't trust anything but my feet and my black cushion. My feet are always my friends. When I am really standing on my feet, I am not lost. And I was intrigued by that quote, and somehow it came up while I was thinking about what to talk about it tonight, and I didn't know where it came from. So anyway, I looked for it, and I found out that the quote comes from a series of talks that Suzuki Roshi gave at Tassajara in the 70s about the Sandokai. And those talks later became the book Branching Streams, Flow in the Darkness. So the 12th of those talks is titled, Do Not Pass Your Days and Nights in Vain. That is a sentence that always has a very big impact on me every time we chant it on Saturdays at the Sendo or online now. I always think, wow, am I spending my days and nights in vain? How would I know, even though I'm doing my best? So during the talk, he said, during that talk that I just referred to, he said, I want to be right here. I want to stand on my feet. The only way to stand on my feet when I am at Tassajara is to sit. That is the reason I am here. To stand on my feet and to sit on my black cushion are the most important things for me. When I am really standing on my feet, I am not lost. For me, that is nirvana. That is how we don't waste time. Moment after moment, we should live right here without sacrificing this moment for the future. So I am grateful to my mother, who in this tough year of a global pandemic has helped me to be aware of my own feet, to what is solid in me, and to stay connected to what is here and real. Regarding the second part of the question that we ask on Sunday at our holiday party, what would you like to leave behind? Well, I'm actually ready to leave behind 2020. I hope 2021 makes that possible. And I'm ready for the magic force of new beginnings, hopefully to have less of virtual reality and more face-to-face encounters. And since this is the final remarks that I will have this year, I want to say that I miss you all very much. I appreciate your support. Looking at the slideshow the other day made me think, you know, how important it has been to have all of you and to study the Dharma this year that I had a little bit of extra time. So since I started reading a poem, I would also like to end by reading another poem, and I will share it on the screen. So the title of the poem is Stages by Hermann Hesse, and it goes like this. As every flower fades and as all youth departs, so life at every stage, so every virtue, so our grasp of truth blooms in its day and may not last forever. Since life may summon us at every age, be ready, heart, for parting, new endeavor. Be ready bravely and without remorse to find new light that old ties cannot give. In all beginnings dwells a magic force for guarding us and helping us to live. Serenely let us move to distant places and let no sentiments of home detain us. The cosmic spirit seeks not to restrain us, but lifts us stage by stage to wider spaces. if we accept a home of our own making. Familiar habit makes for indolence. We must prepare for parting and leave-taking, or else remain the slaves of permanence. Even the hour of our death may send us speeding on to fresh and newer spaces, and life may summon us to newer races. So be it, heart, bid farewell without end. Thank you.
Now open for questions. If you have a question, you can raise your hand or come to Gusho.
Teresa, thank you so much for your Dharma talk. As you describe your relationship with your mother and how she's managing Alzheimer's, I'm reminded a lot of my relationship with my grandmother, who also had Alzheimer's. And of all my family members, I think my relationship with my grandmother was probably the most special, because she and I really took after each other. We had a lot of similarities. And one thing in particular is she was also incredibly strong-willed and really hot-headed, kind of like me. And I just remember, as I spent the last couple of days with her, she kind of dropped all of that, you know, all these things that we think someone should be or how they think they should be. I felt like I actually really got to know who she was at her core. And even though the circumstances of having Alzheimer's were not ideal, I just remember being so impressed with how pure the original nature of who we all are is underneath whatever we say or decide or do who we are. You know, we construct whatever this thing is in front of us. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts or comments and over the time that you've spent with your mother during with this pandemic, on how that might have changed your perception of who we actually are underneath all of this stuff that we create on top of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you had that experience with your grandmother. Well, for me, when I look at my mother, what I see is just pure innocence. And she went through many stages in her condition. At the beginning, it was very tough, because, you know, she was realizing that she was losing her memory. But now she's in a state of grace, really. She's so happy. She's just happy. She's just being. And it's good. It's good to see that, you know, to see that she is not suffering. Yeah. She's just, you know, happy. She doesn't have likes or dislikes. She's just content. I always tell this story. I think I might have told this story to some of you, but a few years ago, her condition was very advanced already. And when it was Christmas time, I came home for a visit. And she was sitting around the kitchen table. I was sitting in front of her. One of the caregivers was there in the kitchen too. And she looked at me out of the blue and she said, "Eres el amor de mi vida," which means you are the love of my life. And then she went back to her world. And I was like, wow, what a Christmas gift. So, yeah. But of course, we had challenges too during, you know, her condition. I think it's different for everybody. She went through some periods with a lot of energy, a lot of energy. So she was running all day, up and down, here and there. And of course, you know, we have to be chasing her. So that was exhausting. Anyway, thank you for your question.
Dave?
Thank you for your talk, Teresa. Mm-hmm. Your repeated mention of feet and shoes and walking around with our feet planted on the earth and so forth reminds me of, I remember years ago reading a passage by Suzuki Roshi where he talked about how it's so central to us that we are the creatures who walk upright. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking at the time, well, yes, okay, I guess, but I mean, we're the creatures who think and talk and do clever things with our hands and have a long and helpless childhood, and all of these things seem so important, and feet just sort of move us around. And then as I was reading more about what's been discovered about human origins, it became clear that looking at this not from the spiritual point of view like Suzuki Roshi was, but from just an evolutionary point of view, we started walking upright before we started doing all those other things. And being walking upright freed our hands for other uses. Being upright had a huge impact on the way that humans have babies. Having those hands to use was one of the things that caused us to get this big brain to think with. And in particular, upright walking also changed around the geometry and sort of physics of our chest cavity and our respiratory system. And it, unlike any other animal, gave us this ability to speak, to have language, to express ourselves. I mean, apes don't just fail to speak because they don't feel like it or because they aren't smart enough. Their respiratory system isn't capable of it. And all of these knock-on effects came from the fact that some number of millions of years ago, our primitive ancestors stood up on their hind feet and walked around, and it had such a huge impact on us. And I think it's really important for us to take seriously what Suzuki Roshi said, that in a very important way, we are the animal that walks upright on 2 feet on the earth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave.
Diane? And then Ross.
Unmute.
Yes, there you
are. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, Diane.
I remember sometime this year you showed me a picture of your mom. And she does have this beautiful, beautiful smile and this wonderful glowing face. And I'm also thinking about after your dad died, how we had a little ceremony in the Zendo, and you talked about him and your relationship with him and his life. And as you were talking, I thought about my own parents who died in their 90s. And as I plunged toward that age, and I feel like in a way I'm getting to know them better than I knew them when they were alive. And I'm wondering if you've experienced that with like your dad having died, and it seems like you see your mother too now in maybe a different way. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about your experience with that.
Yeah, thank you for your question. You know, I remember when Frank Ostrzeski came to Canondo a few years ago to teach a workshop. He said, your relationship with your parents continues forever. Mm. And he said that his relationship with his mother was still ongoing 20 years after or so. And he said he wasn't being metaphysical or anything. That is true. You keep working on things, you know, that unresolved things or questions that you had. So with my father, yes, because my father was a man of very few words, you know. And once I read a book by Milan Kundera where he was talking about Beethoven when he was getting old, that he was exploring the infinite variations of a note. And he said that people are like that too. We have infinite variations, and you can keep exploring and going deeper. And then this character in the book said that he didn't want to die without knowing his father. So I made that vow too. I didn't want my father to pass away without me really knowing him. But I think in a way, you know, because he was very reserved, mm-hmm. He left, and I still have many questions. Like, for example, after he passed away, I found out that that he had a very important relationship that he never told me about. And that's why he married quite late with my mother at the age of 40 or so. And somebody was mentioning recently also the arrogance of youth. I also think about that, you know, my arrogance. Once I came home from college, and in college some of my roommates, they have taught me to clean the windows with newspapers. Till that, I never did that before. So I came home, and after I came home, after a few weeks after, I saw my father cleaning the glass in the bakery. We had a big glass, and he was cleaning the glass with newspapers. And he said, and I told him, "Oh, you copy me. You saw me." And my father said, "I have cleaned more windows with newspapers than you're gonna clean in your whole life." So that was a good lesson, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure, I have. The relationship is ongoing. He also, I think my father is the best man I've ever known.
Mm.
And but he suffered from depression, and I guess we always regret something. So I had this feeling that I wasn't able to help him enough with his condition, you know, with his depression. But yeah, with, you know, after he passed away, I got to appreciate him even more. And yeah, I have questions, of course, about, you know, when he was younger and how he was and all that. He was a musician when he was young, a professional musician. He started playing music, I mean, studying music when he was a child. And he played the saxophone. He joined the army, and he was part of the army band. And then he joined a band here in the town. And then he left. He migrated to Uruguay. A lot of people in this area of Spain migrated to Uruguay in the 50s and 60s, 50s, 60s, 40s, during the dictatorship. So he left. And then he stopped playing music, but he never told me why, and I never asked him. So that's a question that remains with no answer, because I didn't ask that question, you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ross?
Thank you for your talk, Teresa. You did mention once, I forget the exact words, about not taking your days in vain. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing that it's a little tricky because if I take, like, if I get all wound up about my practice, then because I don't want to take it in vain, then I actually defeat the whole purpose. I was wondering if, you know, when you talk about not taking your days in vain, do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I have the same feeling that you have. So it's like a dilemma for me. Because somehow, you know, there's this message that, you know, you cannot possibly do anything wrong. You just, but then there is also the message that you can waste your time. So I don't have an answer. It's more for me. It's a question. It's a question. What do I need to do to not spend my time in vain? And Suki Roshi answered that question in the quote that I read from the branching streams, flow in the darkness. He said, what you have to do is to just be present every moment, right? He said, when I am really standing on my feet, I am not lost. For me, that is nirvana. That is how we don't waste time. Moment after moment, we should live right here without sacrificing this moment for the future. So I guess the answer he gave was to just be fully present for whatever is in front of us. Every moment, then we will not waste our time. Then, of course, that's not so easy. But that's why we sit zazen.
Yeah.
To develop that ability to be fully present for whatever arises.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Megan?
There, I was muting myself. Mm-hmm. How has taking care of your mother changed you? Because it sounds like maybe you appreciate her more. I don't know if you do or not, or it must have made some difference in you spending your year with her and taking care of her, seeing her in a different light, because she took care of you most of your life. Now you're taking care of her. I don't know.
It's a good question. You know, my life this year has been very divided between this world, the virtual world, and also my American world that happens here in this screen, and then my life at home, which is real, right? So it's been an interesting division. This is English, the other one is Spanish. It's been interesting. And, taking care of my mother has been wonderful, really. There's a lot of tenderness and affection in our relationship. And I remember a long time ago when she was still fine, she could still understand things, and we went to see a doctor at a town far away from here, and we spent the night on the road in a hotel, the three of us, my father, me, and her, and she understood what was going to happen, and she made her a promise. She said, I want you to promise that you're going to take care of me, that you're not going to abandon me. And we, both my father and I promised her that. So So it's been nice taking care of her. You said that she took care of me, now I'm taking care of her, and that's true. That's very true. To the point that the other day she called me Mama. I said, oh my goodness. The roles have really inverted. Anyway, it's nice. It's an honor to take care of her.
Teresa, I really appreciated your talk and your first poem. Your first poem, that is expressing very well this feeling of being connected and not separated. A feeling not of separation, and. Something very visible to me, how there are things in life that trigger a feeling of separation for me, and there are other things in life that trigger a sense of connectedness, and for sure. It's a lot for me about my surroundings, like for everybody. Yes, we get feeling of support if we walk bare feet, and if we are in nature and connected to nature. But a lot more also when we are with people we feel a connection with. Like our families, or like this sangha, and to the opposite, probably each has more specific trigger points, so to speak, that I think trigger his own feeling of being separated. And yes, for sure, when I am in a apartment, at the eighth floor, I actually feel almost dizzy. I feel like a little bird in a cage. But more than that is when I am with people from which I feel either I feel directly attacked, or implicitly I feel they have different values and then I feel and then it's very difficult for me to keep. So I want to hear from you on this topic, and I and just shared that for me in the end it's not a direct something directly we could do to feel more connected. Although walking in nature is great, and being with sangha is great, and being with good people is great, but is almost indirect. Our getting more connected through our sitting practice and developing there this. As if we get more grounded, and then in every situation we have a little more resilience of not losing our way, not losing our connectedness. So can you share with us a little bit your experience on this?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Giuseppe. Well, definitely in nature, I also feel a great sense of connection. I would say that's when I experience it more strongly. And of course, when I am with people I love, like with my mother. About feeling separated, you know, as an immigrant, and now that I've been here for a while, it's a weird sensation sometimes, because you're never 100% in any of the worlds. Now I came back here. A friend of mine used to say that when you go back to your country after a long time, it's like waking up from a how do you say, coma? Coma? The patients who are in, is coma the right word? You wake up, you know, they wake up and then, you know, everything has changed. Everything is different. So I came back after, you know, I haven't been here for that long. Since I left for college 3 decades ago. So. And even though here is not so uniform anymore, I am quite different from many of the people I meet. You know, of course, nobody is a Buddhist around here. I don't even mention that much. And so, you know, sometimes I feel a little like a misfit. Then when I am in the U.S., I'm also a little bit different from other people. Even though, for example, when I was in New York, New York is a city with a lot of immigrants. But, yeah, sometimes my accent, you know, especially when I read poetry, that's why I wanted to share it. People don't understand my words well. So sometimes in those situations, I feel a little bit of separation, like, you know, I'm different from the rest, especially if I am in the U.S. in a very, in an environment that doesn't have a lot of diversity or immigrants. So in those situations, and here a little bit, but here things have changed a lot. You know, things have changed quite a lot. The other day I went to a town. This was a very conservative place when I was growing up, very Catholic, very, you know, during Franco years. We didn't have any immigrants, so there was not much diversity and very conservative. The other day I went to a town, an hour drive from here, is where Franco actually was born. And in front of the city hall, I saw the picture. There was like a kind of an exhibit of all these women who are bisexual or lesbian, and they had big pictures in front of the city hall. And I said, "Wow, how courageous and how things have changed!" You know, that they're just claiming their rights or just showing who they are. So that was inspiring, thinking that things have changed and it's more diverse. Anyway, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think a lot of immigrants have that feeling of, you know, when they go to the new country and when they come back to the old one, I guess. I wonder if that's true for you too in Italy.
Oh, yeah. I could go on for a long time on that. Let's skip that.
All right. Well, thank you for your question, Giuseppe, and for sharing your experience. Of course, when I am attacked, I also feel separated. I think everybody does.
David?
Thank you for your wonderful sharing and your sharing your relationship with your mother. Mm-hmm. I've been away from Kanando for a long time, but I was associated with the Crystal Spring Sangha in San Mateo. And for a small Sangha, we had a lot of people of an age which offered us lots of practice with death. And we were lucky to have a physician as a key member who could handle the intellectual and the logistical parts of this. And we had our teacher, Darlene Cohen, who helped us with the spiritual part of it and the rituals. And then we lost Darlene, I think, in 2011, which was another practice. Without being outrageously invasive, how has your practice prepared you for the rituals of death? And what might you ask your Sangha here to help you more?
Thank you. Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that question because, as I said, when I went to the bank and they asked me if I wanted to just have a, you know, buy a policy for when my mother passes away. And even though she has said that she wants to be cremated, so I should honor that request that she made a long time ago, that the idea of her cremation is like I reject it. I do not accept that. So, and in that sense, I wonder if I am maybe not ready to let go of her, you know? And I was listening to an interview with the poet Mary Oliver, and you know, the idea of resurrection was very important for her in her life as a poet and in her life as a human being, this idea of resurrection. And she said it's clear to me that nothing, and that's true in our practice, in the teachings of our practice, nothing disappears completely. She says, you know, she had a big love for animals. So she says, when you bury a dog in your garden, sometimes a rose comes afterwards, right? So in that sense, this idea that nothing disappears, that we are just, there's something that's always there, is helpful. I don't know how would practice help me when my mother passes away. I found it helpful when my father passed away, so hopefully it will be helpful this time too. I've never, you know, when my father passed away, I wasn't here. So I've never been very close to death. I've never experienced, you know, being with somebody at that moment when they passed away. It's never been a very close experience. Of course, I had the experience in the sense that the person was there and then it's not there anymore. But in terms of being with them when they passed away, no, I haven't had that experience. Thank you.
Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Dan.
Hi. You mentioned Hermann Hesse in your mm-hmm. second reading, and he happens to be one of my favorite writers, and I think he wrote one of the most important books of the 20th century called Steppenwolf. I don't know if you've ever read that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible book. But there's a line in that book in which he's one of the characters who was helping him through his journey says, everyone is looking for home with only their homesickness to guide them. And it makes me think of this issue of connection and that home, you might say, is the state of being connected. But the way to connection sometimes can be through the feeling of disconnection. And in some way, you know, connection implies separation. So that I think maybe, I don't know, but, you know, maybe when we're really connected, it's sort of more than connection. It's being home. It's being. But I think that line about searching for home and with only our homesickness to guide us makes me think of practice, and that sometimes it's through the you know, the problem that we enter the gate. Mm-hmm. There is such a thing, you know. It just made me think of that. And if you ever get Steppenwolf is a tremendous book. It's one of the most important books of the 20th century, I think. For us poor little humans in our flimsy psychology, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty good. Anyway, that's all.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh.
Homesickness to guide us. I like that. And home being, yeah, home is always been very important for me, that idea of home. I think it's for everybody, probably.
Yeah.
So, home being, how do you say? Home being. Being is home.
Yeah, right.
Being is home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just participated in this Rohatsu Study Week that ended with 1 day sitting that Vanessa organized. It was so nice. Everything, the whole experience, you know, of just sitting for longer periods of time that I haven't done much this year. I mean, I sit quite regularly in the mornings, but not several sittings. And they place a lot of emphasis on this idea of just being. Just, I think Diane once said that she's a human doing instead of a human being.
Sure.
Just being. Oh, how wonderful. And it was, I can see that it was transformative in the sense of renewing my commitment to the practice. But I could also see, wow, a lot of resistance during that week. I don't know exactly why. But yeah, this idea of being, how shouldn't be that difficult, you know? It's like, if we're all connected, why do we constantly feel separated? Thank you for recommending that book. I will read it.
It's very good. You'll get a lot out of it.
It's interesting. This poem, the poem Stages, I also thought that it was very related to practice in the sense that it's about letting go. He was Christian, right? Hermann Hesse.
He did a lot of Buddhist study stuff. And he was he also was a client or a patient of Carl Jung's.
Mm-hmm.
And got introduced to a lot of Buddhist concepts, I think, through that therapy thing with Jung. And he wrote Siddhartha, you know, which is all about Buddhism and Buddhist stuff. So, yeah, I think he was.
But I can totally see how this idea of homesickness is related to practice, because it's that thing that we feel that something is missing that brings many of us to practice, right? It's this search, this search.
Yeah.
So it's beautifully expressed, I think, the way he put it. It's nice.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being a regular presence at our sendo.
I'm glad to be here. It's wonderful for me, so.
Yeah. Hi, Umar. Hello. Nice to see you.
Hi, Teresa. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Right. I know you've been talking about taking care of your mom. Are you taking care of yourself?
Yeah. I am. I think.
Going on walks? How's the weather over there?
Yes, I try to go on walks. It's been raining quite a lot. these last few days. But yeah, I try to go on walks and exercise and take supplements.
Oh, good. So, you know, you need to take care of yourself and to take care of your mother. So I was just going to remind you of that. And I wanted to share something with you. I picked up Tina Turner's new book, and she's a Buddhist. So she does chanting meditation. And she quotes somebody in there, I don't know who it is, but she says, this person says that your temple is not outside of you. Your mosque, your zendo, your temple, your synagogue is not where you reside. You reside in your body, and your body is your temple. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really beautiful, especially given in these times where everybody's going through so much disconnectedness. I think we need to bring ourselves back to that whole idea. And I was thinking this is very much related to our practice, because this is what we do. David Chadwick was saying the same thing a few weeks back when he said we come back to our breath. And mm-hmm. I was concerned about you and see how you were. I know, mm-hmm. you know, you talk about your mother, but I hope you're taking care of yourself and staying in good health. That's all.
Thank you very much, Umar. That's really nice of you. I've actually been thinking quite a lot about that, because as you know, I am a celiac, which doesn't seem like a very important, you know, condition, but it's actually an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So once you get one, it's easier to get other autoimmune mm-hmm. diseases. So I'm trying to be careful with that. Yep. I know stress is very bad for health.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to really take care of myself and relax and all that. And being aware of the body, you know.
Yeah. But
being aware of the body is so important, of course. And we forget sometimes. So mindfulness of the body, I've also been thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful to this year in the sense that, you know, it's really a test to our determination, right? Because it's easier to sit at, you know, when you are at Kanondo, at the Sendo, you're not going to get up from your pillow because, you know, you just stay there. But if you're at home and you just become impatient, just get up. That's why I had a tough time during this Rohatsu study week, because, you know, they told us, just set an intention for yourself
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you can keep given your circumstances wherever you are. So I set an intention for myself. And one day I sat on the pillow and I was so impatient. I said, I have to get up. I got up. I came back. I sat down. I was getting crazy. I even hit the pillow with my fists of how impatient I was and how frustrated I was that I wasn't being able to just keep my vow. Then at the end of that week, I thought, this is good because, you know, here I am just by myself, like the Buddha was. And this is a test to my determination. Am I going to do it or not? So I'm grateful in that sense for this year, you know, and being able now to just No, that I have my pillow and I can take it anywhere in the world, you know. I wasn't like that before. When I left Canondo, I didn't sit, you know, when I came home or went on trips. But now I have developed that routine, or however you want to call it, and strengthen my commitment through the hardships of this year. But thank you very much for your care. You know, I know that, and I have help, because taking care of one person by one, like my mother by myself, I couldn't do it. You need help. You're right. You know, if you are not well, you cannot take care of others.
Yeah, just remember to take care of yourself. That's important.
Yeah, thank you very much, Umar. Thanks. Yeah.
Take care.
Hi, Teresa.
Thank you, Bunny.
I was laughing when you were talking about, you know, your mom lecturing you about your cold feet and to put socks on or something. So
house slippers,
that's right. Yeah, like for a brief time I had a Latina family, and you know, my American mother doesn't care, right? I mean, not that they don't care, but they don't even notice you're wearing shoes or not. I'd run around barefoot all the time all my life. And then I was in a Latina family for a while, and my abuela would freak out if my feet were bare. I don't know if it's a Latina thing, but she'd say, your ovaries are going to freeze. You're not going to be able to have children. Put some socks on. Like, it was
exactly the same as my mother.
Exactly. So it's a something special about Latina mothers, and how, you know, just how kind of they fuss over you, you know?
Right.
And then you get to Zen and you walk barefoot, no matter if it's the middle of winter, and you eat the cold, the stuff, like a stiff spine, like you did during Rohatsu, and you tough it out. In a way, I mean, Zen is a very masculine tradition. It's a very tough tradition. It requires a lot of persistence. And it's interesting because your talk is a lot about the feminine side and your mother and caring. So I guess in terms of a question, you know, how do you balance the two, you know, like the soft and caring side versus the determined discipline side?
Well, I guess without determination, you cannot achieve anything, right? And the soft side is so important, because that's what practice is about too. To become softer and to appreciate what is subtle. So I guess it's a good combination. And about that, about this, the house slippers and walking barefoot, I have a friend who did her PhD at Stanford about body temperature. And she says that the two ways you really lower your body temperature is just to put your feet on cold or the palms of your hands. So I thought, oh, there's some science to that theory of not walking barefoot.
I'm going to test your theory.
It's a very good question, Bonnie. I wonder, do you want to share a little bit about how it is for you, this combining these two? We just had a conversation about, you know, technology and the use of social media. And I think something interesting came up that is also many times brought in practice, that boundaries are there to free you, like forms, right? We have these forms, but it's not to constrain us. It's just to actually allow us to expand. But yeah, I would be curious if you want to share how is it for you.
I think the main thing is self-awareness, you know, being able to sense, when am I pushing too hard and it's not helpful? And when am I, you know, being maybe too relaxed and wasting my time, you know? I think it's just like a constant process of checking in with ourselves. I definitely feel like in our current culture and society, we lean a lot towards being conditioned towards pushing too hard all the time. So I feel like we're in general more skewed that way, but I think it can be different during different times.
Yeah. I think it's also related to what Umar was saying, mindfulness of the body too. Yeah, like, you know, I was just thinking about how the Buddha almost killed himself, right, before he got that rice pudding. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Teresa.
Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.